Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Now you're gonna want to watch your step here.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is absolutely wonderful.
Footsteps on snow.
They clambered down the cove towards the sea.
And is this just a river?
The river's coming on
our right here.
Yeah, you'll see. We'll see it more easily when we get further on. But what I was hoping is that if we go over by the waterfall, we'll see Canterbury.
Oh, man, look at that.
20 feet.
We were sitting down on the beach one night, and this huge iceberg was rocking. It would take like 3 or 4 minutes to rock over to one side, and then it would start and go in the other direction. And it was just like watching this pendulum in slow motion, back and forth, and it went on for hours. The most extraordinary sight.
It was just offshore,
there. Yeah. It's amazing. And you could be sitting here in perfectly good weather with an iceberg sitting out.
Yes.
I should follow you here, I think.
Footsteps on snow.
In the photograph, she stands where they end. A small girl in a red hat, and in her hand, a snowball.
But that was different.
Now, if you look there, the rocks where the ice is forming, down here below, you'll see they're icicles, except that they're the opposite shape. Instead of being pointed at the bottom, they're rounded and thicker.
Yeah.
And those are the conker bells.
Conker bells.
And these are not great examples of them. The really good ones are when you just get like a piece of grass or something that comes down and then it forms around it. But you can see some of them.
Yes.
They're sort of...
They bell almost bell-shaped.
They bell out. You can see on the ends of the trees here, where the trees have dipped down into the water, where these have formed. You see them when the sun hits them. They're absolutely beautiful.
Conker bells.
Now, this is shore ice. This is not snow. This is formed from the water.
But the ice is just sort of sitting curled over those rocks. It's extraordinary.
Yes, it was different.
Ice. Ice flows. Ice rinds. Ice hummocks. Ice ridges.
Ice stalactites.
Pancake ice. Frazzle ice. Grease ice. Congelation ice. Infiltration ice.
New ice. Old ice.
Brown ice. Rotten ice.
April 2003. She went to Newfoundland in search of ice.
The ice is always female.
Robin McGrath is a writer. She has spent a lot of time in the north.
With the ice.
It's beautiful and it's dangerous. It's attractive and it's frightening. It has this kind of sexual nature and is related to
to birth, for instance, because it actually does give birth. It calves, you know, the glacier calves, and the iceberg is the product of that. And then when they disintegrate and explode, they become smaller and smaller and more multiple. And I think that's sort of a very female thing.
Now she sits in the ingle nook of her house in Beachy Cove,
her ice book on her lap.
So what's in it?
In the book are clippings about all sorts of things like pingos and ice wedges and icicles and ice castles and ice people who've been frozen into the ice and what they've found when they turn them up again, people buried in glaciers and ice cellars and things like that. And it's about saltwater ice and freshwater ice and every facet of it that you could imagine. So we have murders on icebergs. Of course, the Titanic made icebergs particularly popular. What have we got? Okay, what about iceberg babies? Well, we call them iceberg babies, but they're ice babies. They're frozen embryos and things. Again, these are people who have at some point had a part of their life in a freezer. And then there's ice worms. We think of icebergs as being completely frozen water and nothing else. But in fact, there are all kinds of animal life that lives around ice and icebergs. And there are at least three different kinds of little sort of algae and worms and things that are known as ice worms that are supposed to be able to live in the ice.
How do they survive at those temperatures?
Well, I think that there are different kinds of wheat, for instance, that can survive at below zero temperatures and that are being, you know, genetically modified so that crops are resistant to frost and freezing. And they have a sort of a natural antifreeze. And, of course, fish have it too. Sharks and things like that.
Yes, I tend to think of icebergs as being completely empty.
They actually attract a lot of animal life because they attract polar bears, because they attract seals, and the seals are attracted because it attracts fish, and the fish are attracted to it because it attracts algae. And so when you have an iceberg, it's really like an island with its own ecosystem, and there's lots and lots of life around it. So it's actually a very interesting and busy place.
How amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Look at his... The Iceman again.
Yeah. Otzi, they called him.
He looks just asleep there, really.
Mm-hmm.
I see here you've got a piece on ice, the ocean getting noisier by the day.
Mm-hmm.
Does ice make a noise?
Well, ice makes a lot of noise. For one thing, it think of your... The Ancient Mariner talks about the ice was here, the ice was there, the ice was all around. It cracked and growled and roared and howled like noises in a swound. And so, yes, it's extremely noisy being out in the ice because it's moving and crunching and snapping and cracking under you. And depending on whether it's salt water or fresh water is particularly noisy. When it cracks, it makes a huge, frightening, terrible boom that goes right through you. But also, icebergs in particular are noisy because they're made under pressure, and the air, the natural air that's in the snow that comes down that forms the glacier, it is compressed down under pressure, under millions of tons of other ice coming down on top of it, of course. And then when it starts to melt, it's super cold, for one thing, and the actual surface of it is colder than ordinary ice would be. And as the air is released, as it begins to thaw, it expands out, and it whistles, I guess you'd say. It makes this sort of very high-pitched screaming noise that when it slows down enough, we can hear. But, of course, the animals and the birds and things can hear it all the time. And so if you look at an iceberg and there's no birds perched on it, it's almost certainly about to either turn over or explode on you. And then when the pieces of ice go into the water, it pops and sizzles. It sounds like something frying, actually. It sounds like, you know, somebody cooking eggs or something in a frying pan, or sausages, perhaps, because it's really just sizzling and popping. And we call that iceberg seltzer. Now, we like to brag that in Newfoundland we have more words for ice than Inuit have for snow. And in fact, that's quite true, although they have plenty of words as well. And I suspect some of them are actually taken from the Inuit. Clear ice, for instance, is called nilach, and we have an ice term called nilus, and that's a sort of a thin, elastic crust of ice in finger rafts. But I would strongly suspect that, in fact, it's a borrowed word. It's a loan word from Inuktitut. But we can have slob ice, ballycatters, ice gall. A gall is what you would call a wart or a carbuncle or something. So an ice gall is ice through which the water is oozing up. A growler, which is ice the size of a dory. Lolly is soft ice, forms in the water. And we also call that shish. There's pummy, which is ice that's formed and then been smashed up again. And we use the word dirty, for instance. When we talk about dirty ice, we don't mean ice with dirt on it. We mean dangerous ice, so that something that's dirty means it's extremely dangerous. You have ice rind, standing ice, running ice, rubber ice. Now, the newly formed sea ice will buckle under your weight when you walk on it. And that's a good thing, because it means that you don't crack and go through. And sea ice, which has got salt in it, is much more flexible. It's more like a skin than like a kind of hard consistency. So if you're trying to judge whether or not you can actually walk on newly formed ice, it really helps to know if you're on the salt water or on a pond.
And now for our next waltz.
Downtown St. John's.
Ice clings unseasonably to the streets. It is cold for April, they say, and too early for icebergs in the harbour.
In anti-craze, they play on. The fiddle, accordion and guitar against the desolation outside. She,
like the others,
is drawn as a moth to a candle.
But see, the icebergs, like, this ice is much, much harder than, like, the ice that you would get in a lake. Or sea ice. The sea ice is the ice that forms in the sea that just freezes up is nowhere near as hard as iceberg ice. For one thing, sea ice has a lot of salt in it because it's made with salt water. And because of the salt content in it, it's not nearly as strong as this iceberg ice.
Do icebergs not have salt in them?
No, there's no salt because they're compressed snow.
Oh.
And they're glaciers. And they're way harder than sea ice. You know, you hear icebreakers going through ice and can steam through ice. Well, that's because it's saltwater ice and it's not as hard. But this is very hard. And not only that, sea ice is probably only about, I don't know, 4 or 5 degrees, minus 4 or 5 degrees Celsius anyway. It's not very cold. These icebergs are around minus 20 degrees inside. The glaciers are I think, places they're 2 or 3 miles thick. So you can imagine the weight of all that pressing down and how this has been compressed. And then they flow down to the ocean slowly over the years. And then when they get to the ocean, these big chunks break off. And that's where we get our icebergs.
Denny Christian is an engineer for SeaCore, the Centre for Cold Ocean Research in St. John's.
This is towing icebergs.
He was one of the first ice cowboys.
They drop a line, a floating line, off the end of the ship, and the ship steams around the iceberg, and then when the two ends are around, they couple them together and hook them onto the big tow cable of the ship, and then they just steam away and pull the iceberg.
Why do they tow icebergs, though? I mean, what is the function of towing an iceberg?
Well, we have oil drilling rigs offshore here drilling for oil. We also have production platforms. And when the icebergs come down, if they were to hit one of these drill rigs, they could do extensive damage to it. But there are also some pipelines on the bottom, wellheads and everything else. If they hit them, they would cause a major oil spill. So what they do, the icebergs that are coming towards any of these installations, they get them 50, 60 miles before that, and they hook onto them, and they can't pull these very fast. They can only pull them up, even with these very powerful shicks, only about a knot and a half. But if this is the platform here and they get them 50 miles away, they just divert them off a bit so that they'll go down and miss the installations that are there. There's a lot of effort goes into iceberg management. We look for icebergs with satellites, radar satellites. They have airplanes that fly out and look, and they send ships on sweeps to find the icebergs. Because this is a area out here is also known for being very foggy and bad weather, especially at this time of year. So the icebergs are hard to find because they're in the fog and high seas at this time of year and everything. So we have satellites, a Canadian satellite that is a radar satellite, and it looks through the fog. But it can only see the bigger bergs because the little small bergs, the radar satellite, they're putting a better one up probably this year that can see smaller. But they can only see something up to about 9 meters in length is the smallest thing they can see. So they have to find these icebergs a long ways away north of the rigs, and if they look like they're on a collision course for the oil field area, they hook onto them and tow them out of the way.
But do you know when an iceberg is unstable or about to misbehave?
No.
No way of knowing at all?
No way of knowing. And if there's no seagulls on it, there's a good chance it's going to fall.
And what does it sound like when they explode?
They big bangs and cracks, and sometimes they'll crack and it's just almost like a gunshot.
And have you been near one doing that?
Oh, I've been there and seen them fall down and seen lots of times. But I haven't been too close. I did have a couple people on one time. We were on one. And this lady scientist and a student, and they were on, I was standing by in a boat, and we were drilling holes to see, we were trying to find out the temperature of the ice inside. And here they were, and they had walked up on this iceberg and were drilling away, this girl, and I was just sitting there. All of a sudden, it started to bang and crack, and here they were, and I got away in the boat because I knew I didn't want to be swamped. And they had walked up this, and all of a sudden they were 50 feet up in the air looking down at me because the berg had tipped. And I was there, how the hell am I going to get them down off this iceberg? Then all of a sudden the berg, they don't move fast. It rolled slowly the other way. And they were just clinging on by their feet. And then they slid down. And the guy went in the water and the girl went down under. Couldn't see her anywhere. And there was pieces of ice everywhere, you know, rubble ice. So I steamed in and went past the guy. He was okay. They had floater suits on, and he was there. He was okay. He was screaming. So I went in amongst the ice, and I found the lady and went up in the Zodiac rubber boat, like, you know, I don't know, easy to get into. And she couldn't, although she was a strong young lady, she couldn't pull herself up because the cold had gotten to her so quickly. But I got her in. Then I went back and picked the other guy up. And when I pulled him in, he said, I don't know how to swim. So he wondered if he didn't kill me when I didn't pick him.
Glacier bergs.
Bergy bits. Growlers. Brash ice.
White ice. Blue ice. Green ice, dirty ice,
clumpers, pans.
So the whole ocean is just covered with ice, see? And see, it's all broken up a bit.
That's not solid now at all.
No, there's all all gaps and holes and everything between that.
And you jump from one pan to another?
Yeah. I can show you. I'll show you something. Yeah. I think I got it here. This is real old footage that was shot years ago. The people go out here on the ice and hunt seals. They don't do much of it anymore, but this will give you some idea of. Okay. People ocean walking on the ice. See, these are people actually walking on it.
Is that drift ice?
Yeah, that's drift ice. And the ships go through it, and they used to hunt seals.
Going to film a few.
These are icebergs.
For a Hollywood movie made the previous spring. Along with the camera crew, the ship carried 152 sealers who played themselves in the movie.
A lot of them were Irish, weren't they?
Yeah, a lot of people here from Ireland.
How far north is that?
Oh, that's only about. You can see it rolling here. It's only.
The whole sea's moving. It's all that ice is moving up and down all the time.
Yeah.
There's one thing I want to do above all else, and that is.
That's only about probably 150 miles north of here.
To make a film spectacle of a great annual epic. 10,000 men. Their lives against the Arctic.
But it's real good footage, it shows you. These people can walk over it like nothing. We used to be out there doing research, and we'd be just, pussyfooting our way across the ice, and some of the guys with us were sealers. We had a sealing ship, and they'd just get out, and they'd shoot a seal, and they'd just run right across it and pick the seal up, you know, on a...
But if you would fall into something like that...
Yeah.
You'd be gone, wouldn't
you? Oh, yeah. You don't drown, you die. I mean, these guys didn't wear life jackets or anything. Look at this.
It's absolutely terrifying. It's heaving up and down. It's just white expanse.
Yeah. And if you fall in, it's 4 minutes and you're dead as shot at the most.
Ways of life that they admired.
Did they lose a lot of people?
Oh, time? Yeah.
For making that.
I don't know. But I just thought that would be good to show you. I mean, this is just probably 1,000 foot of water there.
Born to poverty and incredible hardship and died in the same.
I mean, what strikes me, apart from the fact that it's very beautiful, is the everywhere. Sheer desperation of going out on that stuff.
This used to be a great... Everybody used to... Now, this is years ago. Used to... It was a thing you did to prove your manhood, almost, to go to the ice. Everybody went to the ice once in his life. The conditions on the ships were horrible. The danger. Lots of times the guys would get there and blizzards would come up. They couldn't even find their ship again.
Every time I leave this country, there was the
great sealing disaster. I think there was one time there was about 200 or 300 of them were lost on the ice, and they were there, and they just... Ship couldn't get back to them for several days, and then most of them froze to death.
Person, I want to absorb it all. I have more friends in this country than in New York. Furthermore,
but,
here I am something. There, I am nothing.
But it gives you some idea. I just thought I'd show you that to
good God.
Give you some feeling.
Really? What's the look like?
That's the only one.
One April, a man and his mare called Kit were hauling wood across the frozen expanse of Tickle Cove Pond. The man knew the ice was getting weaker each day, but he persisted as it shortened their run. The mare balked, turning her head to look at him with tears in her eyes. He used the whip to urge her forward. The pond sighed, and they both went into the icy water.
I raised an alarm you could hear for a mile. And neighbors turned up in a very short while. You can always rely on the Oldfords and Whites to render assistance in all your bad plights. To help a poor neighbor is part of their lives. The same I can say for their children and wives. When the rope it was fastened around the mare's breast, William White for a shanty song made a request.
Several verses of the song later, poor Kit was rescued by friends and neighbors.
She had walked on ice before, in Northern Europe, reveled in the unfamiliar sounds and textures, stumbled over the unexpected roughness, breathless with effort. But somehow, that was different.
Ice has always been part of the way of life of Newfoundland.
On a normal ice year, 90% of our coastline will be covered by sea ice in one way or another. That's in the Gulf and are from the Arctic ice conditions.
And she said to me, isolated? No, no. In the winter when the ice comes in, we don't have to take that ferry. We can drive across to Springdale. And that's what, the ice was so heavy that they could take their trucks right across the bay. So for her, ice was a relief.
The Europeans at first did not involve themselves in Newfoundland during the winter or early spring. And really were not fully aware of the extent of the ice around our coast.
People's understanding of the world of Newfoundland was from the water. So the water in the summertime and the ice, if it was fast ice, was a method of communication, a very direct way of joining people.
We have two different types of ice that we encounter in our region, which is a little bit different than most of the other regions that are ice in Canada, Quebec and Maritimes, in that we have ice from the winter freeze-up along the Labrador coast and the Arctic ice that moves down along the Labrador coast, across the Strait of Belle Isle, and into Notre Dame Bay and the east coast of Newfoundland. The other problem that we encounter is due to cold temperatures, ice conditions and freezes up the Gulf of St. Lawrence, which will cause ice to impact our west coast of the province. It's two slightly different types of ice because the Arctic ice is a harder type of ice and the Gulf ice is not quite as hard.
Beginning in the late 1700s, as more fishermen stayed in Newfoundland, they became aware of the extent of the ice fields, particularly the Arctic ice fields, and the extent to which they were home to a new resource, and that was the seal population.
On our east coast ice, we encounter numerous icebergs. Like on an average year, we get up to 600 to 1,000 icebergs that's in the main ice pack itself. So the ice causes problems for the mariner and causes problems for our icebreakers getting around. Then we've got all of those icebergs that's also in the ice pack, which with the fog and the type of weather, the amount of snow we have, reduced visibility, it's a very considered as a major hazard, the icebergs.
Years ago, before telephones were quite as widespread as they are now, this is, say, up to about 35, maybe 40, 50 years ago, there were on the radio stations here message programs. And one of the most important ones, one most people remember, is the Gerald S. Doyle News Bulletin, which many people listened to simply for the information, the kind of gossipy information that they heard about other people, some of whom they knew, but the vast majority they didn't. And when in the wintertime the bays and or the coves would be frozen up with fast ice, the boats that would be traveling along to do business or to bring mail or in midwinter to pick up men to go to the seal hunt would often leave messages or send messages on those message programs to people, sometimes specific people, sometimes just kind of general call, that they'd meet them at the edge of ice. So people would leave their communities and walk out to the edge of the ice and simply wait there until a boat came along, a ship came along, and moored, and then they either walked right up onto the boat if the edge of ice was strong enough, or they got into smaller boats and rowed out to the boat.
This year alone, we've done in excess of 100 to 150 icebreaker escorts of vessels that needed assistance. We've completed approximately 50 harbor breakouts, which is to support longliners and commercial traffic in and out of harbors, and then another 80 to 100 track maintenance, which once we break it out, we have to try and keep it open. So that's in excess of 250 specific ice-breaking requirements that we've had to provide.
The social strata, if you like, of the sealing vessel became more complex as the century went on.
I think ice and masculinity are two concepts that are tied together here.
With the arrival of the steamers and the drop-in price and drop-in value of sealing, to become a sealer became more and more difficult. And consequently, it did take on an aura of rite of passage. And young men competed to get berths to the ice.
Since yesterday, we've had 4 search and rescue missions on longliners that's trying to get through that ice. We've had 4 icebreaker requests for support so far, and we anticipate that there will be 250-plus boats going out there within the next 2 days.
Fast ice.
Shore ice.
Ice foots.
Ice fronts.
Floating ice.
Bally catters.
Grounded ice.
Glim.
She is in the bar of the Anchor Inn Motel in Twillingate. She had driven there the day before, some 5 hours up the northeast coast of Newfoundland from St. John's. Outside, it is snowing heavily, and there is icy rain.
Bare glass.
She cannot leave till the weather clears.
She had come in search of ice, but this was different.
2 truckers and the bartender play air hockey at a nearby table, and a sad, drunk little man pumps loons into the jukebox.
Time stands still.
Hello. Boy, not much, buddy. Everything's pretty quiet. Yes, my son. Everything is pretty quiet. Your boat got a great spot. It's even a lot more off home or something, but she's up there tonight, I'll tell you that. Yeah. What's on news now?
Jack Troke is a sealer. She is sitting at his kitchen table, trying to fathom the mysteries of sealing. The heating purrs against the night.
Yes, boy.
He is waiting to go out on the hunt.
Yeah, I got company here now. I've got a young lady from Ireland. So I, yeah, good now. Oh, yeah. What am I seeing, buddy?
You know, I know nothing about this. You leave here, and Where do you go to?
We go wherever the seals are. Understand? They could vary. Right now, the seals is about, what are we looking at? Maybe 140 miles from here. That's like the claw fries. We got to go on a roundabout direction to get where they are. Because you got to navigate and traverse through ice and that sort of stuff. Some years they're south of this place. Some years they're 400 or 500 miles north of here. It's all according to the weather. Weather is a factor, see there, and ice conditions, the type of winter you had, how much ice you got off the coast, the wind directions, everything plays into it. Conditions right now is pretty good. It's pretty good. It's as good as you can get, I guess. But now, a couple of weeks ago, it was terrible. We had over 200 miles of ice sitting off the coast, and that was way up off the Grand Banks, which is 500 or 600 miles south of here.
And would you go that far looking for seals?
If we had to, yes, there, yeah. We travelled that far. Yeah, we go up north, up the Labrador coast. We go wherever the seals are.
He started sealing at 14.
I learned from my dad. My dad used to be a sealing master in large vessels, but he was a master mariner anyhow, and you do that in the sealing. And my sons learned from me, and I, matter of fact, I'm still learning. I never went to the seal fishery yet, but I did learn something, some little thing that, well, God, I never seen that before.
And tell me, is there a tradition around here, like your son is now the master? Is there a tradition of handing on boats?
Yes. Yeah. You handed down what we call an enterprise, your old fishing enterprise. Whatever you got pertaining to fishery, you'll pass along to your sons. Well, I passed along everything that I had when I retired to my two sons. But now there's only one left, and he's still carrying on.
Death by drowning. He found his son's body tied to the capsized boat in the sea at the foot of the lighthouse. A man full of sorrow. He moves on quickly.
A white coat is a heart pup, and when it's born, for the first 12 or 15 days, it's white. It's a little bit yellowish for the first 48 hours. Then it gets what you call really white. Then it starts to go back, starts to shade the white fur and starts to get the black, the grey, the dark greys, the smoky greys and spots. And that's when we hunt them. You shoot the seal and then you retrieve it. Take it aboard the vessel.
He shows her pictures.
And this guy here, we start to clean it up, remove the blubber from the carcass and the fiver sort of thing. This is what we're doing here. We're cleaning up seals and see what you can. You look at this kind of stuff, I can see why people don't take much of this industry. I haven't got a problem with that.
Because you could, literally
you know,
blood,
it, but, yes,
yeah.
You know, I wonder how the hell can it can't be any different than that.
So, and what are you retrieving? Do you retrieve the blubber or the skin?
We take the skin and the fat, but the blubber comes with the skin. That you take that off all at the one time. That's done in one. You cut the animal down like that, and you take the skin and the blubber that comes. That's attached. The blubber's attached to the skin, and you take the blubber off the meat, and then we wash them, and just pack them down the old vessel, and that's it.
Okay, let me
take your gear.
I think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure, got it,
you
all
got
right.
It.
Okay.
So I go back to
the
ladder.
Put your foot down there.
Yeah.
Don't put it down. There you are. Come down on the next one. There you go.
The next morning, still icebound, she goes to his boat. It is the nearest she will get to the ice or the hunt.
Everybody carries a small boat, see?
And is that what you go actually out hunting on?
When the conditions are right. The ice is enough water between the ice pans that we can use this. We'll drop this overboard and harvest from this vessel, too. We have radios that we can are in close contact with our...
Ah.
If we have two men in these, and you've got to keep track of these two men at all times, because there's a vast ocean out there.
Yeah.
watch your head. When you step up there, watch
your head.
Okay. This is the heart of the vessel.
Yeah. It's warm in here.
Yeah, well, we got the...
Ah.
Down the living,
oh, right, yeah.
Down the living quarry, we got the stove lit. I lit that this morning. All the latest technology, all satellite navigating sort of stuff. You just push on any of these buttons. There's your radars. This is radios. And this is a radio with a range of about a couple of thousand miles. The bottom sounder. And then you got your satellite phones, cell phones.
Yeah.
This is your... That's a direction finder. So we keep track of our small boat at all times, just in case he has a mechanical breakdown. As long as we got radio contact, we will find him.
Yeah.
Well, this is the... This is the hoist. This is the satellite coverage of the ice.
Ah.
This is from March the 31st. See, this is St. John's of here, though.
Yeah.
This is, you're getting out right up to Hibernia.
Yeah.
This is how much ice. You're looking at like 240, 250 miles wide here.
Yeah.
But a lot of this ice has gone away since that, since the mild weather and the wind. Because, well, you got a lot of wave motion in the ocean. This ice washes up. And goes away pretty quick.
And that would be it. So it's just gone now.
A lot of this is gone, up this tongue up here, but this body of ice here is still there. It's what we call pack ice. It's stuff that some of it drifts down from the north coast of Labrador and from the Arctic. Some more of it freezes winter time because we've had a severe cold winter. And that's what she looks like. That's the report comes out 31st of March. There's one there, eight with a second. See, it's starting to change. You notice there, look?
Yeah.
Starting to...
Yes, the ice stone at the bottom on the left here is gone
now. Yep. This is the position of seals. Now. Watch your head.
I will.
Not a day for a woman, this is.
Not at all, no.
Ice grains, ice crystals, ice dust,
pencil ice, plate ice, bullet ice,
ice planet. The ice rain stops. She has seen no bergs, no growlers, no bergy bits, no real ice.
A frozen harbour, a picture postcard town.
But something is different, though she knows not what. And somewhere north, it happens.
The great berg hesitates. A cloud passes before the sun. The berg glows blue amid a tar black sea. Then almost imperceptibly, it retreats. Drawn back into the fog and pack ice. Back into the first of the great veils of the ice.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.